Everybody, this is just your captain speaking. This is just a short announcement that HOD Brian Schreder is on his way. We'll have to wait for him because he has to table any errata. So thank you for your patience. We can still socialize a bit to keep ourselves warm. Thank you. Till later. But good afternoon, everybody. Hearty welcome to all, and I think all are on board. We have everybody on board, everybody in one piece, except HOD Schreder is complaining about he had his back speedy recovery. But you're still young, will recover quickly. So good afternoon again, and my name is Basil Cavido. I'm the chairperson of the Standing Committee on Education, and I'm going to be, next to me is Mr. Wasim Matthews. He's the coordinator for the sector, and I'm going to give over to the rest of the members to introduce themselves.
Good afternoon, Lorraine Wotter.
Good afternoon, Theo Woodyfield.
Afternoon,
Philip. Good afternoon, Cameron Dugmore.
Thank you so much for the members. And the lady stepping in now is Marion Burgess, Assistant Coordinator. I acknowledge our MEC, and I'm going to ask her to introduce herself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still Debbie Schaefer, MEC for Education.
Then we have the HOD, Mr. Brian Schreder, and I'm going to ask him to introduce his team.
Thank you very much, Chair. Brian Schreder, you know, am I going to ask each one of the EXCO and program managers to just introduce themselves?
Leon Elias, CFO of Education.
Wada Connor, Director of Business Strategy and Stakeholder Management.
Archie Lewis, DDG Planning.
Good afternoon, Tau Matsiriso, DDG, Institutional Development and Coordination.
Good afternoon, Peter Beards, DDG, Curriculum and Assessment Management.
Good afternoon, Ivan Krolis, Chief Director, People Management Practices.
Good afternoon, Salia Abrams, Chief Director, Business Intelligence Management.
Thank you so much. There we have all the officials, and we have also Mr. Led Malaysian at the back, one of our interpreters, and the others are, One Direction window, so I can't see their faces, but they are right at the back. Welcome to you as well. We are honored to have members of the public today, and I would love each one of them to introduce themselves. So we start with the captain, Mr. Mbiko.
My name is Nandi Mbiko. I'm from Nyanga Tourism.
My name is David Shambula. I'm from the
didn't get governing body at the school. Thank you.
Sean Edison,
provincial
treasury.
Sean Hoffman, provincial treasury. Mr. Hill from Parliamentary Merchant Group.
Good afternoon, Shahid Arnold from provincial treasury.
Afternoon, I'm Josh from Parliament, researcher.
Afternoon, Joel Gutter from the AG.
My name is Kaleen from Youth Witness Educators, Nyanga.
Mr. Nadine, LTD, Linden, Nyanga.
Elizabeth Kenny from Kumani, Kishin, Nyanga. I'm Valencia Loon from Linya Primary School in Nyanga, and an SGP member.
Thank you very much.
Pamela Pike, SGP member at Linya Primary.
Thank you so much and feel welcome. And it's an honor to host you today at our meeting. And we have, my word, we have three of the officials on that side. Introduce yourself. Thank you so much. I'm sorry for that slip. And we have another member who wasn't present when we introduced.
Yes, Leonard Max. Sorry, Chairperson. I asked because you said Mr. Brian Schroeder was not there. I went out to look for you. I'm here. Thanks.
Thank you so much, member Leonard Max. I'm glad you found him. So I just hope it's not you that he's back. I'm assuming he's here, but thank you so much. Apologies, we have none. Any apologies? No apologies. I just want to read this to you, just to give some context, because we are here to the table, vote 5 today, the budget estimates 2018-2019, and then also the annual performance plan right in front of us. We have top 2 till 6 tonight. That will bring us up to dinner time. So I want to make a suggestion that members are to cross-reference with the APP if they want to pose questions about the APP. Then we can do it in conjunction with the thick book, the budget itself. Is that okay with the members? Okay. Now I'm going to give over to the MEC, Ms. Debbie Shepherd, to give a bit
overview. Thanks, Mr. Chair. It will be brief. I think the issues that we've been raising over the last number of years are still the same kinds of issues that we're facing now, except we have even less money and even more children. We are really struggling as a department. Despite the fact that we are managing what we have extremely well, we have simply not got enough money to provide what we need to provide. We have another 25,000 children this year compared to last year. We have got, you know, the figures, the provincial equitable share formula, as I've said before, 50% of that is based on the 2011 census figures. So we are simply on the back foot every single year, trying to provide for these learners who are coming in their droves to our department, because we have done extremely well with what we have. I do have to just mention, of course, that a few weeks ago our department was awarded 2 awards at the Botopele Awards, the National Botopele Awards. We got a silver award for best department in the country, not only education department, and we got a silver award for best HOD as well. So I want to congratulate my team on that particularly. I think it's an excellent team effort and huge progress in that respect over the last few years. But as far as the budget is concerned, we are very grateful for, we've been making a lot of representations to Provincial Treasury regarding cutting our budget or not cutting our budget. National Treasury again has required the provinces to cut quite a substantial amount of money across the board from the budget. And we have been pleading that we cannot afford any more cuts, and we're very grateful at least that we don't have to cut. But the fact remains we still remain in a very, very precipitous position. We have an immediate need for about 680 teachers for current growth, and we have a backlog of about 2,000. We have ongoing problems with finding sufficient space for children in schools. We've made a lot of progress over the last year as regards what we can do about safety issues, as regarding particularly the fact that our chief director district has been appointed as the chairperson of the Prof Joints, the school priority, school safety priority committee of the Prof Joints in SAP, which has certainly helped to improve coordination and communication between us and SAPS, who of course is directly responsible for safety, particularly around school. And we've put a lot of emphasis on that. We also have absorbed the national anti-gang strategy into our provincial strategic goal 2, and we have regular meetings now where all role players at our steering committees, including Justice, Police, our Department of Justice, Police, NPA, we've even had state security coming to those meetings. And high-level delegations from the police. So we're most grateful for that. And you know, it is a whole society issue, but we're certainly pleased for the coordination that we are able to achieve in that meeting. But yeah, at the end of the day, the fact remains that our province simply isn't getting enough of the equitable share from national government to provide what we need to provide, and that is an ongoing concern for us. Thank you.
Thank you, MC. I'm giving over immediately to HOD for you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. There's a lot, I think, that we are thankful for, particularly as we look at the 18-19 budget allocation and the efforts that we are doing in the context of trying to ensure that we get quality education for every child in every classroom, in every school in the province. It's a huge ask, it's a difficult ask, because the reality of the matter is that the budget for years, as the Minister has said, has not kept up with the need of the increasing growth in learner numbers. And it hasn't followed the learners fast enough, and we've raised that matter repeatedly. It makes for the reality that the department is, in fact, going backwards in terms of class sizes, in terms of pupil-teacher ratio, in terms of ability to supply infrastructure, resources and others that is associated with that. And so I am on record as saying that the fact that we still have the best matric results, top three in results purely, the best performance if the national department's basket of criteria are applied, that is Western Cape, Free State, Gauteng. So whichever way you look at it, it's still the top performance in the top three in the country in matric results. Also, if you take a look at the benchmark assessments for grade 3, 6 and 9, whilst we retained and improved, particularly in the foundation phase where there's been a key focus, the reality of the matter is that those performances that we've managed to maintain and improve has come at a huge cost. Where we have under-resourced components in the department, for example, HR being one particularly, where we've managed to keep our financial controls in place and thus had three team audits in a row now, for which we're very grateful, that has come because of exceptional hard work. The performance that we still retain is because we have the best cohort of teachers in the country. It's a fact. Those teachers are taking strain, and we need to also acknowledge that the conditions under which teachers are working in classrooms is difficult. The lack of discipline, the lack of orderliness, the lack of support, the socioeconomic regression of our communities, the impact of gangsterism and drugs is all impacting on our ability to deliver education. And we have to have a clear understanding about those two challenges that we face. Nonetheless, the department remains committed to improving that. We're grateful that the 18-19 budget was not reduced as was threatened. However, there is a real reduction, if not a net reduction. And the real reduction is because we are challenged with learner growth. We've got 134 million to deal with learner growth, but that's not just for teachers. That's for everything related to growth. And it does not compensate for the backlog of 2,000 teachers that we have in the first place because of the growth in learner numbers over the last number of years. Just this year, for example, we have approximately 25,000 growth since the SNAP survey for 2018. That's a significant number that we've not been able to cope with the additional resources. We recognize the economic challenges that the country faces.
But we also think that more ought to be done to be able to move funding where, A, the delivery is good, where we manage our funding well as depicted. There's no other education department in the country that has had clean audits since the Moccasin. And I think that's not an insignificant reality. It takes a lot. And then maybe I must just also say that the last thing perhaps I want to say is two things. That first of all, the drought impact also on our education facilities budget is significant. So we've directed also funding to make schools a bit more self-sufficient in the context of boreholes and water and grey water. And over time, we will reticulate, for example, also grey water into the processes where toilets, etc., and health and safety issues related to that are concerned. The last thing I want to say is that we are concerned as a department about the outcome that is not factored into the budget of potential wage increase negotiations. That's a huge risk going forward for us, because the history has shown in the last number of years, whenever there's a wage increase that is higher than the intended amount, it has simply been expected of departments to absorb that, and there's not been funding from the national negotiations into our coffers to be able to compensate for that wage increase. And so we have, in fact, cut whatever we've been able to do, not only to the bone, but we're starting to cut the bone. Nonetheless, we are committed to also make use effectively of every cent that we get in the 1890 budget.
We thank MG and HOD for those two snapshot overviews. Now I'm going to leave it over to the members to pose any questions, should
Chair,
any.
Sorry, there was one thing I forgot. Mr. Chair, I would like to just table Sarah Arasa to the APP, please. I apologize for that, but there were some issues we discovered that we need to table. So we do have copies for the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Member Dagmar.
Chair, I'd just like to just raise a procedural issue just before we start, and that is I noticed that the members of the public, if I counted correctly, there's about six or seven members from one school governing body in Nyanga, and I just wondered if you could just explain at what point. I'm not sure if the members of the governing body want to bring a matter to the attention of the committee, but could you just, I mean, I know we have from 2 until 6, so if, I think it's just important to clarify if and at what point the members of the governing body can address the committee, because I presume they are here to say something. If they're not, then it's, if they're just observing.
Thank
but
you,
I just wanted that, because you normally clarify at what point members of the public.
Okay,
but I want to reserve, and then when I can get into the speakers list for what the MEC and HOD have said, because I do have some comments as well.
Right, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you, Member Dagmar. Just after we've tabled the vote and go through it page by page after the members have given their input, point 9 states specifically that the chairperson will allow the members of the public to ask questions or make presentations, submissions on the budget and ask questions and the department to respond accordingly. So they are factored into the agenda. Satisfied? Chair. Welcome, Member.
No, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Before I ask a few questions on what the MEC and the HOD has just, you know, the input, maybe just a few seconds that, Chair, if I may request that there's errata, maybe that we, someone take us to, because I see it's quite a heavy pages, and I'm not sure. We've worked through the document now, and we see there's a lot of areas which is covered by this errata, and how will it influence what we have prepared ourselves on our own documents. What does it say to us? So that one just got a sense of what has been presented as an errata to us now. But we must now work it in into what we've looked at, what are the major changes to it. I see the pages and so on, but it kind of, at least if it's a one page, it's understandable, but I see there's a lot of, it's minor things that I see, but you know, it kind of throws us out a bit in how we prepared. So can someone just take us through the Sirat quickly before, I'm not sure, Chair, maybe it's just what I'm...
I think it's a fair request. Thank you, Member Willipie. If each of you can just take us through.
Thank you. If I can just say, there's not significantly substantive issues to it, and I do apologize for the errata. The errata has come about on a number of levels, but particularly because of the fact that there were changes to infrastructure and other budgets. You will see, for example, that the infrastructure budget conditional grant has been cut. That has an impact on those issues. And so there were a number of factors, and because there's a quite complex annual performance plan with links with various places in the budget, it's difficult to make sure that everything is 100% right. We've got a good track record, and so we apologize for it. We rather want to just make sure that every little detail is correct, particularly where there are years and columns that have slipped in incorrectly. So I can do every one of them, if you like, and take you to the page. That'll take about half an hour if you want to. Or else what we can do is I can ask one of our colleagues that when there is a question asked on a particular item where there's an errata, just to come in and clarify the errata, if that's what you'd like to do. If there isn't a question on it, then it maybe isn't necessary. Alternatively, I can go through every one of them, depending on how you would wish for me to deal with it.
For the sake of democracy, I am going to ask the rest of the members. There's an option. Either we go through it one by, per item, or refer it to the relevant official when the question pops up.
Shall go with the second option.
We'll go with the second option.
Okay. If it's in the errata, there's changes, then the official
good.
Must then direct us.
Right. To. Thank you so much. So we concur on that.
Mm-hmm.
Member Dagmar?
Chair, could I just ask, I mean, it is quite unusual to have such a number of errata. I mean, I did also pick up the dates, you know, there was a lot of references to 1 year when it should have been the current year and so on. But could I just ask, is there not an errata, which I don't see it, on page 17, because I don't see it being listed here, those figures on the enrollment at the public ordinary schools. Chair, if you don't mind, because maybe while we proceed, someone can just check this. But if you look there at the enrollment, in 2017, you get a total of 1,021,492 learners, right? And then when you look at 2018, that jumps to 1,111,000. Now, just a very quick look at, you know, when you compare the difference between 2017 and 2018, there's absolutely no way that you can find, I mean, literally 80,000 different. So that really seems to be quite a fundamental error, which goes to the very heart of questions that we would like to ask around teacher-pupil ratio, etc. So can Mr. Eli, or I'm just saying you're the mathematician, I know Mr. Shreddy is, if I'm not mistaken, a math teacher, or was, but really that just seems to be a very serious error, unless I've got something wrong here.
Thank you, Member Dagmar, for picking that up. Mr. Eli, being a mathematician, man of figures.
I must protect him because he's a money man, not a numbers man.
He's not a numbers man.
But I am going to ask Mr. Saleh Abrams if he would just comment on that, please.
Thank you, to the Chair. The 1,021,000 refers to the public ordinary, the number for 2017 refers to the public ordinary schools. The 111,000 or 1,111,000, in fact, being error, it takes in a different scope of independent learners, school learners as well. So the revised SNAP number, the 10-day SNAP number for 2018, is 1,045,000. That's the comparative to the 1,020,000 that was quoted for 2017.
Chair, can I just ask, is that 1,045,000 and anything else, or is the?
I'll refer to the exact number in a moment, but it's in the order of 1,045,000.
Thank you so much.
If I may just say, I value the question because the question, of course, that you ought also to be asking us, if I sat on that side of the desk, would be, so why is 2018 a different set of parameters than 2017? The other issue just is that the latest set of figures is always not the final set, because by the time it goes to to this document. It's still on CMIS 2013, 13 February figures. That gets cleaned up in the amended survey when we have the annual survey done. And the rest of the figures are, of course, the final annual survey figures. You want to comment just on that, why the change, Sonny?
There hasn't been a change in parameters through the chair. The 1,045,000 per your description is indeed the public ordinary learners that we've counted in 2018, and should be omitting the number of independent learners that makes up the balance of the 1,111,000.
Thank you so much.
Why then was that not included last?
For the calculation purposes, for the ratios, we use the public ordinary school learners only.
But why has that changed from now? Last year to this?
That would be the error in the extension of the parameters.
Thank you so much. Can I assume we are all on one page? Are you satisfied, Member Dagmar, with the answer?
No, I think we obviously are satisfied to get this response, but we're not satisfied that you know, I think generally with the number of errors, including this one.
Okay, noted. I now give opportunity for members to ask questions on the two SNAP overviews, one of MEC and one of HOD. Member Olivier.
Chair, I know you've made a request that we cross-reference when we look at this, but given the fact that the APP is your forward thinking of what your plans are and so on, I've got a few, you know, pages which I, besides what the HOD and the Minister has now given us an overview, but I've got a few questions to ask on the
You're welcome.
Which might not necessarily warrant me to cross-reference, but if needs be, whoever responds can then direct me to if it's included in the blue main book. But Chair, on the minister's input, and I hope Chair will allow us to also on the written forward of the minister also raise up a few issues. The first one, Chair, if you look at page 3 of the minister's forward there. And that has been summarized in a verbal input now. Page 3 of your APP. That's where forward is. I just want maybe the MEC to give a bit of more detail to paragraph. I'm going to count it from the bottom, paragraph 3 from the bottom of page 3. Which really talks about a cohort which was 2000, but it has decreased, you know, by 703 and 209 respectively. Just a bit of a zoom in into that paragraph in her forward. What is she saying to us? What must we look out for in that paragraph? The second point on the same page, Chair. I see that the retention rate is 64.3. And it is indicated as an improvement here, which one welcomes, even if it's a smaller improvement. But the concern really for me is what do we do with the 35.7%, which does not really make it right through to the area. And maybe really what are we doing in terms of that? You know, for me, 35% of learners in that cohort that does not really go to matric and drop out, that's still a significant number. And maybe really, Chair, what kind of plans really to keep those learners into the system and not become later a social responsibility cases for the state and so on. So that's the one issue. I'm not sure whether you want me to ask my few questions and then...
I think I'll take a second round. I'll push each one a chance to pose a question or two, then I'll take another round. Are you satisfied with it, Member Uli? Member Buerta?
Chief, can I just latch onto what Member Olivier is asking? And I want to know, you know, we have this gap of learners that are not retained. They perhaps fall out at grade 7, sounds fine, grade 7, no. They fall out there, they don't go to start even secondary school or high school. And they are scholasties is hulle nie bevoeg om na 'n FET college toe te gaan nie. Because you have to have minimum, you have to have passed grade 9 to get there. So I want to ask the minister, is there any plan, and I'm not sure whether they would fall into the the basic education or higher education, because they are sort of a nowhere group, if I can say that. So are there any what would be plans, and where would they fit in to be able to go to a level of being economically viable at in a later year of young people?
Thank you, Member Buerta. Member Christian.
Chair, I know we ask this question quite frequently, but again, with the influx of learners every year that comes into the province, we know that the money does not follow the learner. So sometimes the department gets very bad publicity to say that learners are still not placed. Every time in the paper we read, learners are not placed. Can we just, I know the department is doing, but I just want to know today what is done, because we know now by next year we will have new learners. What is done to accommodate those people and place them in classes? And just also, Chair, just to ask, it's also worrisome in some schools, the ratio teacher with learners, that's also a worrisome factor. How is the department dealing with that? With that, thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Member Kitchens. Member Dagmar.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I think following a similar approach in terms of what the MEC said, but also having a look at her forward and also the vision for the department, and then also the introduction by the accounting officer, just a few issues. Chair, I think the three overarching goals as they are set out, I think, are very useful. I think they're quite simple, and they sort of tend to focus our attention on the language and the maths, the quality of the passes, and then particularly the third one, which I think is particularly important, is trying to increase the quality in poorer communities. But I think, the framing of those three goals is, I think it's helpful. But I just want to particularly ask in regard to the quality in poorer communities, to actually have some practical examples of redress in regard to poorer communities. I want to use just one or two examples. We have a situation in many of the rural areas of the Western Cape, in small towns, where you had schools which were, in terms of classic apartheid descriptions, Christian national education, so-called white schools. Like, I want to use the example of Albertinia and also the example of Uniondale. So you had a school in the town which historically served white students from those towns. And what has happened, for a number of reasons, you find a lot of mainly middle class, mainly white students from those schools going to other schools, in other words, attending private schools. So the learners who are now attending those schools are the sons and daughters of farm workers. In other words, they are very poor. But yet those schools, directly in a rural setting like that, continue to be fee-paying schools. Now, for me, one of the actual areas of redress would be, and there have been occasions over the last couple of years where schools have been invited to apply for no-fee school status, but in many of the rural communities, in that kind of situation, you have poor learners from rural communities attending former Model C schools, but not being in a. And I know there would be huge relief for those schools if there was. So for me, that's an example of redress, and I just wanted to ask about that. The second issue is also for poorer communities. It's common cause that in many of the fee-paying schools, we are able to impact on the learner-teacher ratio because of the fees. And it would also bring massive relief to working class and poor communities, rural communities as well, if there could be additional teachers. Now, the MEC has referred to the budget issue. I think, Member Christians, you also raised that issue. But it really does come down to what are the choices that the province makes in regard to the equitable share. Because, for instance, we've raised in another committee the $1.4 billion almost that lies in the Department of the Premier around the strategies around connectivity and broadband. And then when one looks at what the actual transformative effect of having an extra teacher in a so-called township school or in a rural school, a school that can't get a governing, that doesn't have money for governing body posts. So I would like to ask, and maybe the MEC and the HOD could just tell us, with those learner numbers which we've now clarified, and we know that there's still a projection of like 1,045,000, and the allocation of teachers proposed in the money for staff in this budget, what is the pupil-teacher ratio that this department is anticipating in primary schools and in high schools, very specifically? Because I think the reality is that once we have that ratio, then we all know that in the former Model C school, fee-paying schools, whatever teachers then are paid for by the governing body dramatically changes that. So for me, redress is about a specific decision, not just by this department, but by the province, to actually allocate additional funds so in the poorer schools we can get a better teacher-pupil ratio. So that's like a general question. And then over the page on the APP, which I think is part of the forward, although not exactly in the minister's forward, there's a reference there in the table at the top that there's been a decrease in that one of the goal statements. Yeah. Sorry?
Which page are you on?
It's on page 2, Chair. Yeah, it's sort of linked to these introductory comments. It's about a goal statement. As I said before, I think the three goals as contained in the vision, I think, are useful, and they are spot on, I think. But there is the goal statement that the WCD wants to invest supporting schools to ensure that there's a decrease in the number of schools with a grade 12 pass rate of under 70% to 30 schools only by 2019. So I would just like, could we be reminded of what were the number of schools who had a pass rate under 70% in 2015, and then in 2016, and then in last year? I mean, what I really want to try and ask is, are we on track to actually have only 30 schools that would be under 70% by 2019? I think, and then Member Olifida has raised the issue of the retention on 64. That was another issue. And then I just want to go to the minister's forward. It's like on page 4, sort of 1, 2, 3, about 5 paragraphs down, where the provincial government identifies values of accountability, transparency, integrity, innovation, and so on, responsiveness. Now, I want to specifically ask the MEC, because I think she would be aware that I asked a question in the legislature specifically about serious concerns that have been conveyed to us by members of the governing body of the Grove Primary School around how the budget information, according to the parents, had been kept away from them, certain extra amounts that had been paid to the school principal, etc., etc. And at that point in the minister's written response to me, she indicated that there was an investigation and that there were no issues. Was the governing body, or some of the members rather, contacted me and said they were unhappy with this response and that they had then approached the national government to investigate this issue. I would just like to ask, what is the current status in regard to the conduct in particular of the principal as well as the treasurer of the governing body at the school that I've mentioned? And then second last would be on page 5, on the issue of e-learning. I mean, it's commendable that the department has now provided connectivity to almost every school. Could we actually get a clarity on what almost every school means? Like, which could we just get a sense of which schools are not yet included? And I would then, and then there's also reference there to the fact that the department has provided local area networks to schools and Wi-Fi connectivity at almost every site. So, you know, does that mean that of the 1,400 odd schools or whatever the exact number is now, is like 1,390 schools in this province that have all got access to Wi-Fi? And then just one question, I don't know if someone can come up with that answer, but linked to this, obviously it helps a lot if we have these wide area networks, we have Wi-Fi. But in terms of the number of smart classrooms, because obviously you're wanting to try and have that interactive experience right in the class. So what I would like to ask, what is the total number of classrooms that we have, and how many of those classrooms, or what percentage of those classrooms, are now smart classrooms, so that the benefits of Wi-Fi or when can be felt in the classroom by those learners? And then linked to the point of the safety, the fact that the chief director for districts, can I just ask through the chair, or maybe Mr. Shredder, is that Mr. Alan Mayer is the chief director? So he's chairing this committee now. Okay. Could you just refer to us in the budget, the actual financial allocation specifically that is going to the Safe Schools work that the department will be doing in this financial year that we're discussing? Thank you.
Thank you, Member Dagmar. I think quite a few of your questions overlap with Member Olifield, especially in terms of the redress issue. And then you've also alluded to the ratio. That's another crucial point, and then the innovative initiatives of the department. So I pick up three broad categories. I leave it over to MEC and HOD and the rest of the officials to answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Firstly, regarding Honourable Olafir, page 3 of the 4, you want to know what I was referring to about the numbers, the reduction in the numbers taking math aside. What I'm saying is that the cohort as a whole reduced by 2,000, but the numbers taking maths and science only reduced by 703 for maths and 329 for science, which means that as a percentage of the cohort, there was actually much less, which means more people out of the cohort as a percentage are taking maths and science and such. Then as a retention rate, I agree with you. Anybody who doesn't continue to matric is a concern for us. We're doing as much as we can, obviously, but there's a lot of emphasis, even from DBE, on the three-stream curriculum now, technical, vocational, and the academic. We're also sitting with a lot of historical backlogs in many of our learners, which is not easy to just remediate in a year or two. So we certainly give as much support to the learners as possible, and we are trying to provide as many options as possible in that regard also. And just to link with Honourable Poeta, if people don't go to high school, they have the option to go to School of Skills. And we have about 20 of those now. We had 18, and I've been pushing very hard for another two to be opened, the one in Eureka and one in Wellington. And those have now opened in the last year, I think this is the beginning of last year, actually. We're having to do it incrementally, though, because there needs to be some structural changes made, particularly to Eureka, where the rooms are basically like prison dormitories, so we can't have people staying over there. But we have opened those, so we're pushing that as hard as we can. But the fact is that those schools are also extremely expensive to run. So we also do have special needs catered for in our schools as best we possibly can. And I'm not sure who can deal with that. Mister? I don't know, you can deal with that. About the special needs. Okay, then. Yeah, I think I've done that. They do fall under, anyone of school-going age up to the age of 15 falls under basic. If they leave school and they're over that age, then they would fall under adult education, which is higher education. So we have schools of skills, and if they are not in school at all, then they do have to go to approach the National Department of Higher Education. Honourable Christians, yes, we do have a problem every year. We make absolutely every possible plan we can. But the reality is just, no matter how many classrooms you order, no matter how many teachers you have, it just never seems to be enough. And unless we get more money, we just simply cannot anymore. There are some schools in one area. I asked one of my district directors to place a child. He says, we do not have any place in that area anyway. He said, I cannot fit another child into the school. So that is, it is worrisome. The teacher learner ratio is also extremely worrisome, and there's only one thing that's going to change that, and that is more money for teachers. Arnold Dagmore. Yes, I'm quite familiar with Albertina, and I completely agree with you. Since I've been in this position, I have been complaining about the quintile system, first of all, which is a national policy. I've asked for it to be changed because it's the result of the quintile system that Albertina is still a prepaying school, and I know that there are poor learners there. The same applies also to other schools. Prince Albert is another example of such a school. And we've been extremely good in actually complying with the national government policy, and I think we've actually done ourselves a disservice by doing so, because I've been doing a lot of investigating over the last year in our finances and comparing it to other provinces. And the Western Cape has given the lowest, we are regarded as basically the poorest or second poorest province in the country. There's been no account taken of the change in the composition of the Western Cape, the change of population over the last number of years. So we get the lowest percentage according to the national policy of poor schools in the Western Cape. And even so, in a province like Limpopo, where I think they're allowed to have 70% in quintiles 1 to 3, and we only allowed 40%, am I right? Yeah. Even there, they still go above it. They still put more schools into quintiles 1 to 3, 20% more, up to 20% more than the national policy. As a result of that, if we do the same, we aren't going to have the money to provide for those learners. So what I really want to do, and I'm writing to the minister, national minister, about, I'm asking, what is the department doing? Because I've been told that they do provide for that, and they do make allowances for that under the counter with regard to the National School Nutrition Program, for example. So we're trying to do the right thing, and we're actually suffering because of that, quite honestly. I would love the quintile system to change. As I said, I have raised it right from the start since I was appointed. There has apparently been an investigation by a national department, and they said the only option is to change it to fee-paying and no fee-paying schools. If we take the risk and say we'll change your quintile to a lower quintile, and we aren't allocated the extra money, then we're going to end up in a huge problem because we have to provide services without the money that we can't pay. So I'm really, really concerned about that, and I'm equally concerned that nothing has been done about it nationally with other provinces who are exceeding it, even though they have the highest percentage allocation of poor learners in their province. As far as redress is concerned, yeah, as I say, I would love to make them more no-fee schools, but I need the money for it, and it's just simply not possible. We have, as you correctly said, we have allowed 216 or 18 schools to be no-fee schools, and I would love to expand that to more schools because I know that they are suffering. And it's not possible. I've even looked at what the difference would make if we took some funding away from the wealthier schools to give to the poorer schools. It really won't make any significant difference. We've looked at that. We've had those discussions. So any other suggestions are most welcome because we are very well aware of what problems that schools are facing. One thing that has actually helped us to save some money is the smart water meter device. Saving us hundreds of millions of litres of water, but not only that, it's also saving schools a lot of money on the municipal utility fees. So I'm really hoping that will give some relief in it. And as far as the pupil-teacher ratio is concerned, really it's quite, the amount of money that we have to pay for one teacher is quite significant, actually, and we don't get that many for, even though it seems like we've got a huge amount of money, it doesn't necessarily translate into as many teachers. I'll let my issue tell you more detail as to how we're trying to manage the situation as best we can. I have to say that there are some classes with huge numbers of learners in them, and the teachers have done incredibly well. They've managed their classrooms well, they've managed to somehow make a plan with the desks to fit them in, but it's really, really, really difficult. As far as the equitable share, yes, that is true, but at the same time, when your equitable share is reducing in real terms every year, then you can only do so much. You know, we're trying to make sure that we keep up to date and make sure that we keep our learners in the 21st century, and one Honourable Dagmore has been one of those people who's been pushing that since the Kanya Lab issue. So we really have to make sure that we have a connectivity and that we have what we can. We are also trying, where we possibly can, to use the broadband and the e-learning strategy to try and bring good teachers into the classroom, literally via streaming and so on, where we possibly can do that to try and alleviate some of the issues there. people to Croatia anticipating I'll leave that to the SG. Pass rates under 70 I'll leave to the SG also. Growth primary, yes, I agree. We did do an initial report, and I did, the indications were, as I recall telling you, that there were some concerns, but they didn't seem to be of huge significance. But I think I also said we were busy with the second investigation, which has not been done before the national government asked us to. The SG has that report, and he can answer that question further as to what he's going to do about it. Lands also I'll leave to him, and e-learning, and smart classrooms, and I'll leave the budget for safe schools also to my colleagues, other than just to say also, you know, you can't only just look at the safe schools budget, because we look at safety in all kinds of ways in the department, and there are things also, the preventative issues, and there are school safety committees, and there are issues that are, we've got psychologists, social workers, all incorporated into the department budget as a whole. So, you know, don't just look at the safe schools budget alone. We also look at infrastructure. We're looking at I went to a school this morning, in fact, in Kraaifontein, which is amazing how they're building it, taking into account safety concerns. So, you know, it's not just a simple question of saying, here's the safe schools budget, that's all you're spending, because, I mean, that's often what we are accused of. But the way we're building schools, the measures we're putting in place for computer labs, we're building concrete screens, concrete ceilings, for example, so that it's not so easy to break into schools and steal. And we also are incorporating those expenses that are bullet reflective and so on in areas that are problematic for gangs. So I think if I can hand over to my SG for the rest.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to try not to repeat, but just augment where comments have been made. Sometimes our department is, in a sense, punished for our efficiency and effectiveness. For example, Member Olivier is quite correct when he says that the throughput rate of 64% means 35% not. And in fact, the throughput rate that you will see elsewhere is higher when calculated in terms of the year-on-year ASSs, and that's because of the calculation that write the matric exam in the minister's report and the ASSs elsewhere. But whichever way you calculate it, if you take a look at the throughput rate or the retention rate in any other province, we've got the best retention rate and the best throughput rate. And that's quite significant because it means that we are being successful in keeping kids in school longer and giving them more exposure. But the downside to that, despite having 35% that are not, the downside to that is that it then crowds our resources and challenges our resources. The learners that we don't retain, and it's a very good question, because on the one hand, some people might respond and say, you can't have education resolve all the issues of society. The dropout rate is not an educational problem, it's a societal problem. And we're trying our best to retain more. We recognize nonetheless that if the education or scholastic ability of learners towards the end of the primary school is not up to scratch, it means that they will more easily drop out. So we're working very hard, and you asked us what will we do. We're certainly not happy about the 35 that don't go through all the way to schooling. But we're very happy about the fact that we're trying our best to improve the quality of learning, and there are a number of things that we've done. For example, the focus on the foundation phase at the bottom with the actual increase in the foundation phase improvement, for example, the grade 3 language and mathematics improvement is significant. The emphasis on our project in our 100 most challenged schools and the upliftment of that over the next 2 years is another input in trying to make sure that learners have a better approach. One of the things that we've learned recently is the value of phonics again, which Minister Macheka said the other day might not be very beneficial for African language-speaking learners, because phonics is not necessarily just supportive of that. But nonetheless, the emphasis on reading, early reading, and we've also got a project called the early grade reading assessment, which is focusing also on getting it right from the bottom. So it's part of the answer to the fact that we're not happy with dropouts, and we're trying to address it from the education sector in trying to make sure that we get the quality of learning better lower down. And it partly answers also Member Buerta's response. There are a number of other things that we do recognize when learners are out of school. It's not an education mandate, but for example, the youth focus project of the Western Cape government, there is an emphasis on second chance matric to try to get them again to just go further, and all of those issues that we are supportive of. I want to speak a little bit about the learners not placed and how we in fact prepare better. It is a huge challenge. A, you don't know how many are going to come in. B, if you can get across the nation that all provinces have a campaign that ensures that parents register their kids by the end of March, which is now for the first time a campaign that DVE is pushing, then it will mean that there's also an understanding in the Eastern Cape and the Northern Cape and Free State that learners should be enrolled in a school by the end of March across the nation. That ought to give greater clarity of numbers and give us enough time to then plan effectively if they are enrolled either in this province or elsewhere. The challenge comes when they do not enroll across, and then there's an expectation of the province to deal with it, even those who arrive in the new year unannounced. And so we're supportive of such a process. Secondly, we try to plan, we try to extrapolate hotspots. We put in orders for mobile classrooms. We've kept about 120 mobile classrooms we've planned in advance, of which 50 we've put in storage over the December period so that we can try to erect them as quickly as possible when we know where the need is, because we don't necessarily know where that need is. Also, that is limited by available budget. And the reality is that all of those factors, including planning for the inflow that is coming, even before we have the money for the inflow, it's just an impossible thing to manage. The fact that we, for example, also purchase a percentage of resources, books, for example, in excess, is all an attempt to be able to redirect that quickly. I must say to you, kudos must go to Mr. Matsidiso and Alan May and the district directors, who have whittled down the thousands of learners who were unplaced to what is ostensibly on the books by the end of last week, 1,300, I think. And that figure has been cleaned up all the time, because when you seek those learners, they're not there anymore. It either means they've gone back to other places, but they are no longer available where they said they wanted to be. And a lot of work is going into that tirelessly to deal with that. We agree that the ratios are worrisome, and the ratios are directly related to the funding issue. I'm going to ask Mr. Eli just to augment the comment, Member Dugmore, on the redress issues, other than just to say that the practical examples that you seek for redress are important. In the cases, for example, of poor learners who go into the schools such as Albertina and elsewhere, schools can apply for A, fee exemption, and B, for fee compensation of non-paying fee. Now, not all schools take that up. Many schools do. And so that fee compensation issue is exactly for schools that get poorer learners in that can't afford for it. And then the whole host of issues such as food resources, quality of teacher focus, ensuring that also poor communities get access to the e-learning strategies, etc., are part of those, and there are more. For example, the balance of payment to the poorer communities relative to the richer communities in the norms and standards funding and all other ways are there. Maybe I can just say to you from a practical perspective also, every district is focusing on supporting learners from poorer communities in schools more so than learners in affluent communities. And that's got to do with also ensuring the quality of teaching in those schools is better. It's a significant redress to help education quality increase for the province. Almost all additional teachers that we get have been allocated in poor communities. It doesn't quite cover for the redress issues. All that I can just say is that there is a pro-poor quintile, in as far as the quintiles are flawed, percentage increased balance for teachers that go to lower quintile or poorer communities. And the question was also raised about the budget, for example, in the Western Cape government for broadband connectivity was mentioned. In our view, the expansion of e-learning opportunities is a significant redress factor, and therefore the broadband connectivity and the access to broadband in schools in poor communities is a significant attempt at trying to level the playing fields. Because, as I said before, if we do nothing, we know that affluent kids have access to Wi-Fi in their homes. They've got access to broadband. They've got access to digital resources. They all have digital devices, whilst poor kids don't. And so the attempt to create access for them is a way in which learners can use digital resources to learn for longer hours than just being in school and teachers. So if you look at a future focus for education, it's always a difficulty to get the balance right about how you fund the current need, which is, if you like, a 19th century education need, and how you try to redress by creating access for poor kids to global learning through digital resources. In our view, there's got to be a balance between those aspects. And I will comment a little bit, maybe I should just comment now. If we take a look at page 42, Member Dugmore, you'll see PPM 106, for example, gives you an indication of the e-learning or broadband connectivity. You ask how many schools at the moment are not yet connected and are planned for. The only schools that are not connected are, the numbers decreased from 191, but we call it a 191 just for the sake of recognizing the group. It's actually significantly lower now. But the so-called 191 group that are small rural or deep rural schools where there are not signals directly available. Now, those are being addressed and solutions sought for them, and the plan is in this particular financial year, and that's why if you take a look at the targets in that space, we still have about a 2% of learners representing those 191 schools that do not have access to broadband, but you will see that that all changes to 0% in PPM 106 in the outer years. I'm going to ask Ivan just to speak to the primary school, high school ratio. Ivan, you want to give me those ratios quickly, please? Mr. Gorelis?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I don't know how far back I need to go, but maybe just from 2015, just to show the increase. And I'm going to give secondary schools first and then primary schools. Okay, 2015, 1:33.8. And then 1:35.8, that's a primary school. 2016, 1:33.1. Primary, 1:37.3. 2017, 1:34.1. And primary school, 1:37.3. And then 2018, we had 1:35. And primary school, 1:37.8. So the provincial average for 2018 is 1:36.9.
Now, Chair, thank you, Mr. Rose. When we have, Chair, that kind of ratio, we all know the implications of that. We all know that there will be some that are lower. We all know that in high schools, across the board, they are lower because of choices or subject choices. And we're managing that as best we can so that the subject choices are limited so that there's not an excessive spread with very small classes. But the reality of the matter is that's why primary schools are higher than high schools, not for any other planned reason. Furthermore, we also know that it's at 1:37, there will be classes with 40 and more. And again, from an educational perspective, we would love to see those ratios come down. There's no question, and I'm sure the political authority also shares that view. But the fact of the matter is that that we need funding to do that. And I want to assure you, it's not because we have inefficiencies in the way in which we manage that space. Then also, I think Member Dugmore asked for the schools under 70% and the focus. If you were to take a look, Member Dugmore, on page 20 of the APP, you will see in the top table there that we do not have the under 70 list. We have under 60% because nationally there are so many schools that perform under 60% that that's the target and the determinator. And you will see, despite those, we've come down from 78 in 2010, for example, to 31 last year, but we had gone up in the from the, bringing it down over the last 3 years. Now, it's understandable that when you have a decrease in matric pass rate, then of course you have more schools with a pass rate of lower than that. The under 70% we're able to give you, if you want that figure, I don't have it here, and it's also not in ATP, and we can give you that trend analysis if you wish. Just to note this. Then, Chair, there are a few more questions. The question around e-learning, I think I've more or less responded. If there's anything that I've not and you want to deal with that a little bit more, you're welcome. In the context of the Wi-Fi access, now, the e-learning rollout is happening through an enabling environment, and that is happening through getting broadband connectivity for all schools. The intention is that by the end of next year, all learners will have access via Wi-Fi labs, and teachers will have access via Wi-Fi working points in the school. So all learners will have access. The question, of course, was asked particularly around smart classrooms so that Wi-Fi is across. By the end of next year, more than a third of our schools will have Wi-Fi LANs covering the entire school. Now, that's a slower process, as you can understand. But a third of our schools is not insignificant. More than a third will have Wi-Fi LANs by the end of next year. You asked the question about the smart classrooms, and I just want to refer you to, is it page 42? I think page 54. Page 54, see, I need a team that owes me up my 200 chair. Page 54. On page 54, under strategic objective 2.3 at the bottom table there, the number of schools benefiting from e-learning rollout, you would see there that in the 16-17 year, we rolled out additional 1,061 smart classrooms, 900 the previous year. And 17-18 a further 1,000 smart classrooms, and we will continue that. By 2020, 40% of all schools will have completed, no, all schools, all schools will have 40% classroom smart classrooms. Now, that's a significant rollout, and the rate is approximately 1,000 per year in also in this financial year smart classroom rollout. Then, just before Mr. Eli speaks to Safe Schools, I just want to make a comment about Grove. Minister has spoken about the Grove situation. The Grove research has been completed. I have signed off on it. There will be action that gets taken. Chair, I must just be guided here in terms of the fact that it is not yet public knowledge. It is an internal process. I'll gladly speak to that in camera if you want to, but the conclusion has been done. Been signed off, and I've given instructions for actions to be taken related to the Grove School matter. I've also spoken to the chairperson of the governing body so that there is an awareness that issues are coming. I'm not sure if that's satisfactory.
I think you'd say this way, under the circumstances.
Mr. Eli,
I think it's the issue around the redress. I think if you look on page 167 of the budget book that we're going to go through still, you'll see of the 1,437 schools we have, 861 of our schools are actually no free schools. So that's 60% of our schools. And most of those schools are in the rural areas. When we started with the whole issue around no free schools, we recognize the fact that the rural areas schools are normally small schools, but they're also very poor community that serves there. So most of the no free allocations has gone to those schools. Then in terms of assisting schools in terms of redress as far as, if we exclude now the educators or the basket post, but if we just look at the norms and standards, we've tried to maintain the amount per learner. On top of that table as well, we've tried to maintain that as well, because that's the figure that's published by DBE for us to maintain those schools. So that comes at a cost as well. I think the Minister has referred to the trade-offs. So we try to maintain quintile 1, 2, and 3 at the allocated enormous standard amounts for 1,316. That's per learner allocation per year for those no-fee schools. And in the case of what was mentioned, Albertino or any other school, what we've tried there, in the absence of any other funding, we've tried to say, look, we've got money set aside for the fee exemption,
And that is about 53 million rand we put aside for 2018-19. Normally, most of that money gets taken up because with the applications we receive is more than we budgeted for. But we try to spend all of that funding. So if schools apply, what we sometimes find is that schools say they want to become no-fee schools, but when we look at the actual detail, they're not all applying for the fee exemption. They leave some of their learners out. We don't know why that is. I'm not sure if parents are perhaps a bit feeling intimidated to apply for it at the school, but we try to encourage schools to say, look, you must get your parents to apply for fee exemptions, and that will help the school itself, because no use that school draws up a budget and they can't collect half of the school fees. So we try to do that. The other thing we do is a number of other things we do. Where schools struggle with paying municipal services, we also assist schools in that regard. We also go as far as to say, if schools also need assistance, financial assistance, as far as the purchase of LTSM is concerned, that's learner teacher support materials concerned, they can also apply to the department in that regard if there's a shortfall as well. So we've tried in other ways to try and assist schools as far as the funding issue is concerned. If I leave it at that. Then just to come down to what the ministers mentioned around the safe schools issue that we have to look in terms of the other sectors we spend money as well. The budget set aside for safe schools for 2018-19 is 34 million rand, but that's to be seen in the context of how it's been steered within the province in terms of what funding is sitting at the Department of Community Safety and also what money we're spending as far as emergency maintenance, the vandalized budget is concerned. We're sitting in infrastructure now, which is program 6, and also the other issues around the safety of schools is concerned as well. As the minister said, there are other, if you can so-called hidden costs that's lying on other programs which augment this budget, but we can't technically separate that as well. It's now part of the way we normally operate. But this particular budget deals with particular aspects as well in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Mr. Eli. Members, officials, I think we move immediately to the tabling of this vote 5 and we start on page 136. May I thank you for your input. Thank you, members, for your questions. I would say probing, really probing questions at times. How can I use the word uitmergelend? What's the English equivalent? Remember that more. But in any case, thank you. Definitely. I could feel it on my own body. But in any case, thanks for the responses. Page 163. Any questions on 163? 164? 165.
Chair, I just wanted to ask in terms of the drought, could we just have an update there? There's a reference to the fact that schools will remain open, and that emergency school closures may happen to alleviate the pressure, etc. Will endeavour to keep the schools open and maintain the high standards set. Obviously, we're all aware of the shifting out of day zero to 2019, but is there any update in regard to this budget statement and the issue of the drought and our schools? What has actually been done up to now?
Member Dagmar, and actually, may I latch on to what Member Dagmar asked in terms of the drought? Is it possible for you to give us a short sketch of day zero at a school? What the scenario would be like? And secondly, in terms of transversal cooperation between the different sectors, do we have reps from the Department of Education also in the disaster task team? And the imminent, I would say it's actually the warning that schools may cloud. How to avert that? Thank you. Any more questions on 165? 167? That's correct.
Can I just pause and ask here, were the questions that you asked me, Doug Moore, just bear me out please, Chair. I just want to do follow-up questions, but only after the HOD has responded to.
Okay, then I give the HOD, because I work according to numerical. I wanted to take X number of questions, but in any case, you...
I think the member will make it through. Chair, I'm going to ask for the what has been done so far for Mr. Archie Lewis to respond. Mr. Archie Lewis is our DDG Education Planning. Whilst you might know him as Infrastructure, it also falls in his space. And he's also our representative on the transversal draft team and has done quite significant in work in the draft plan, if you like, for the Education Department. I'll comment a little bit later about what day zero looks like, because it doesn't look good if a day zero arrives. But I'm going to just set your mind at ease a little bit about what the planning had been and also what we're continuing to doing, regardless of the fact that day zero may have shifted. There is ongoing work. Mr. Lewis?
Thank you, Chair. Our first drought initiative started in September, October last year, where we were lucky that we could reprioritize about 25 million rand of our infrastructure budget to do a range of interventions, amongst others the installation of water restrictors at schools, smart water meters at 270 schools. We piloted a reticulation project at Pakamisani in the Eden Karoo district, and the reason for that pilot was basically to get a sense what will it cost the department if we need to drill a borehole, put up tanks, reticulate that water to the ablution facilities, what will it cost us per school, so that we can have a sense and extrapolate over the 1,506 schools that we have. We also surveyed all schools in terms of which schools have boreholes, and we discovered that we've got 407 schools already with boreholes. Unfortunately, some of those boreholes are not operational anymore for one or other reasons. Some of the pumps are stolen and gone. So we started a process to make all that, and that is what we are currently doing, to make all those 407 schools, those boreholes, operational, so that at least those schools can attend to their own needs when we get to a stage where there's no surface level water available. So that those are the current initiatives that we are busy with. Then we are planning also into the new financial year to see how we can further the interventions, and Treasury has assigned 77.5 million rand specifically for drought, but we have augmented that amount with our own reprioritization by, we were forced to do it, delaying certain capital projects to the amount of 300 million rand that we have availed going into 2018-19 to deal with drought initiatives. Some of the new initiatives include, amongst other, to provide each school with a facility to keep water, mainly a tank. The bigger schools, a 10,000 liter tank. The bigger schools will get two of those kind of tanks, 20,000 liters, because of the number of learners. That is one. Secondly, we are also investigating in the metropole. We have learned through our engagement with other departmental stakeholders that there is also a treated water reticulation system in the metro. In other words, the water that went to the sewage plants and then get treated and get back. So 31 of our schools are already connected to that system. And we are now in the process to identify more schools in close proximity, at least 1 kilometer, that is what the city allows us, so that we can connect more schools to the treated reticulation network and use that water then to reticulate further into the ablution facilities of a school, so that those schools can become not dependent on the normal clean water that we get through our normal reticulation. So that we are busy with. Because day zero holds other challenges and risks for us, if there is no water to schools, then it doesn't mean the school is sitting without water, but it also has a fire hazard. If a fire breaks out at that school and there is no water to deal with that fire, so we have plans in place also to provide each school with about 20 to 30 fire extinguishers come that day, so that there are at least facilities at the school to deal with fires, etc. The biggest portion of the project will be to reticulate the water from tanks to ablution facilities. But Chair, you may also ask the members that if we put up tanks, 407 schools will be able to get their own water. Where will the other schools get water and there's no rainfall? It's a very expensive exercise. And as education, we are still looking for budget to deal with it, but that is part of the plan, is that we will have, that is currently the plan, to transport water to fill the tanks, so that the water can then be used by the learners. The water that we are looking at is treated water. We're also looking at borehole water at other localities, where the yield of borehole water is strong enough so that borehole water can be transported to schools. But we're also looking at seawater as a source to deal with the reticulation of ablution facilities. So that in a nutshell, Chair, is...
Thank you very much, Mr. Lewis. I think that gives a lot of hope. And I can just assure you that I'll limit my morning shower to 20 seconds. So in that way I can help. Member Buerta.
Chair, I just want to latch on to, in an event that a school should close because of this, will the department speak to the teacher fraternal? How, where do they go?
Yes, Chair, the whole matter is quite a complicated matter. First of all, you asked me to sketch a day zero scenario, and we are looking, for example, at the realities of schools in the Northern Cape, schools in the Karoo, schools in drought-stricken area that where education continues. It's something I think that is also how we approach it, how we think about these issues. So if, for example, there is no water suddenly for a day, then some people might say close the school, etc. But if you've got no water for an extended time, you have to find alternative options. And so part of the planning that is going into that is to deal with the health and safety. Because if there's no water, there are three ways. One is, what is the health and safety issue? The other one is, what about drinking water? In other words, the sustained water. Now, drinking water, you can still say, bring water to schools, and part of our planning, you've heard all over the show the possibility of bottled water being donated or purchased in the end, etc. We have our schools already to store some water for emergency drinking water, bottled water in the event of it being needed. So there's a bit of a proactive engagement in that regard. And so there are two issues that Mr. Lewis has sketched. The one is we've got to work at our schools to be a water saving mechanism. The other one, we've got to work at our schools to find some form of water augmentation for the needs that are there. and the boreholes and the water tanks, etc., and the utilization of grey water or seawater for the reticulation systems is one way of doing so. We would, of course, have to take decisions if the event happens. And part of that decision would be noting that the moment that you take a decision for kids not to come to school, there are all kinds of related issues. It's not just the education issues. It's also social issues. It's also where the kids go during the day. It's safety issues for kids. So it's the very, very, very last decision we wish to take. And we will not somewhat take it if there's a water cutoff for a day, for example. If it's extended, then we have to find ways of doing that, which includes the hours that kids come to school, for example, where and where we cannot augment water through tankers and through bottled water, etc. And the question about where the teaching fraternity goes, teaching fraternity, we will say, go to the school, use that time to, first of all, they can bring drinking water, it's a smaller group, they can use that opportunity to engage. And this is exactly where our e-learning possibilities come in more. The more we have a whole provincial education system with digital resources, the possibility is that you can have all kinds of options that are in the present development. For example, if you had, and as we are moving to, every single curriculum topic in every standard or grade, in every subject, with video clips that are able to be read by a QR code reader, kids can then view it without any cost if there's no data rating on their digital phones, etc. So learning doesn't have to necessarily stop if there's a need for whatever reason, including, for example, in the case of we recognize, though, that we're going to have to take management decisions as we go along and when that happens. But I would be, first of all, it will not be a system shutdown. It will be isolated cases, and the extent of that will depend on the circumstances on the ground.
Thank you, HUD. Yeah, and it's also a matter of faith. 168. 169.
Chair.
168, yes, member. VP.
No, Chair. Chair, I'm at 167. 167, sorry. Okay. No, Chair, just at the bottom there. Maybe Mr. Lewis, just to give us an idea. Given the fact that the infrastructure grant has now been reduced, and I see when you look at the bottom paragraph there that many of your projects, you know, building of new schools and so on, and replacements, you know, may be delayed. Just an indication to me now that we're currently sitting with a headache of schools that is almost unusable. We, as the chair says, by faith, learners are still in those schools. And soon we will sit with a different crisis than to the water. And I know you last said to us this, I'm sure, almost more than 10 million, shortfall in terms of meeting the current demand. I think that was last year already, so it might be more now, obviously with the increase in the number of learners every year and with the ratios that we are looking at. So obviously, just an understanding, what are we looking at here? Are we not heading to a second crisis than to the drought if we look at the current condition that we are at? And what are the plans maybe in place? I know there's a decrease from the grant from national, but obviously this issue can't just be settled off in this room and say it is what it is and we can't do anything because the money has now been cut or there's no money. But I think the scenario of the condition must somehow at the highest level be dealt with, you know, with national or whoever, so that, you know, we don't sit with a second crisis than what we have. We're already sitting with, yeah, as I said, with schools that when we visit some of the schools, we don't believe that learners should be at those schools. But the schools are there, and now we are cutting and so on. So I'm saying, what are the chances that we're sitting with a second crisis to that of water?
You remember?
Chair,
even if we put the drought aside, you know, our infrastructure has been in a crisis for a few years now, because we cannot deal with the growing infrastructure needs vis-a-vis two things. One is the available budget for infrastructure, but secondly also the capacity of the sector, the infrastructure sector out there to provide infrastructure that satisfies the needs of us. You know, you get in the sector, you know, a project has to run 8 months, but it takes longer than that, you know, so that is also impacting on what we eventually have. As a department, for the last two years, we are also looking at alternative infrastructure, not just the brick and mortar, because the brick and mortar, which is sitting in our psyche, you know, that is the best, because that is what we've learned during apartheid. And anything else than brick and mortar is substandard, and we, as a nation, we also need to work through those, you know, that an alternative building, if it's not brick and mortar, might just as good or even better than that, and that is a process that as a collective we all will have to work with. So we are trying different things, Chair. We are now rolling out, for example, over and above the mobile units, schools manufactured a little bit differently, you know, and when the schools, when those classrooms, not schools, we're building classrooms first, just to test it, to go back, you know, and we don't want a repeat of what has happened at Kofaku, you know, and we are trying, put it to the test, get experts to come and evaluate and so on. So there are different things. Our biggest risk at this moment as education in terms of our infrastructure is not the number of additional accommodation. Our biggest risk is the condition of some of our existing schools. There are some of our schools that's falling apart, which we need actually to replace. And we don't have money to replace those schools, because the money that we have, we must deal with the growing learner numbers to deal with that. So it is a terrible situation, Chair, and the member is correct. At some point, if there's not help from somewhere, then as a province, we will not be able to accommodate all the learners coming into the province.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Set aside. 168, 169, 170, 171, 172, 173, 74.
Check. Sorry, Chair. Just 1 point on 172. Sorry.
Welcome.
Chair, just on the social sector EPWP incentive grant. I see that's a 268.82% increase in that incentive grant. What does it imply? What are we covering there? Why, you know, with that huge increase? Just speak a bit on that grant funding. I see the others. But just on that one, I see there's quite a huge jump on that incentive grant.
Mr. Elan?
Chair, initially the grant was going to be decreased and basically terminated, and the National has now come forth with a proposal then, with the funding has come through to initiate it for, as you can see, only for 1 year. And that's the funding they've put into there. The funding normally goes to the ECD practitioners, you know, for the stipends. It normally goes mainly for that particular purpose, for great art.
Thank you,
Sheila.
74, 75, 76, 7778. Yes, Member Duckman.
Chair, just in regard to the summary of payments program one, there are two increases from 27 to 28, which I just like clarity on. The one which is actually, according to the table, a 245% increase is in program one for administration, is for HR. The revised estimate last year was 2 million, and this has shot up quite suddenly to 8.3 million. So it's quite a dramatic increase. I just want to try and understand what's going on there. What is that money actually for? Who's being trained? And then you'll see corporate services. There was the revised estimate was 315 million, and that's a 9.80% increase to 345 million. So if we could just have an explanation, are those new projects? Are they just expanding different projects? Or what is happening in regard to for HR and then corporate services for those increases? And then under earmarked allocations, you just get some more information about the graduate tutors. There's a 4 million rand allocated. Could we, I don't know if this is linked to the Year Beyond program, or could we just get an explanation about that? Thanks.
Thank you, Member Dagmar, for your question.
Yeah, just in terms of the increase in corporate services, that the main increase is there is that that's mainly pertaining to conditions of service in that regard. That's the bulk of that increase, whether it's due to. And then the issue around human resource development, that's obviously for our training. That is just additional resources we're making available for training there. We've obviously made a conscious decision to increase the allocation there, and as far as the training of public service is concerned, because that deals with the public service issue, the educators are flying in program two. So that's a conscious decision we made in that regard. I'm not sure about the question around the tutors.
Just while people are talking about the graduate tutors, could I just ask Mr. Eli? Mr. Eli, under HR, okay, we understand this is HR development for officials. This isn't about the teachers. This is about officials. So in 2014, you know, it was a million and then 1.5. It's just that, can you just explain why is it such a big jump? What is being done that wasn't done over all these last years that it's now literally a 245% increase? What's different here? Because it just seems, I'm just battling to understand what is happening with this one. I'm still on 178. You'll see there's a 8.3 million for HR compared to, if you look at previous years, there was marginal increases over 5 years, just a little bit more every year. And now it's going to 8. I just like to understand what's going to happen.
Mr. Chair, can we come back to you on that particular question? We don't have the answer right now. Okay. Just coming back to the grant tutors, that is for the 4 million rand is for the MOTS entities.
Excuse me, Mr. Eli, are you talking about the latter part of the question?
Yeah,
are
you
coming there?
That's fine. Okay. 4 million is for the MOTS entities, but we'll give a response to as far as the 8.3 is concerned.
Satisfied, Member Dagmar, 180.
So just on 179.
I'm sorry, I skipped 179. My fault. 179.
I hope I haven't missed something, but under program two, And then I want to cross-reference to page 17 of the APP, the figure that we got, saying that at the moment we've got 1,045,000 learners in the system. And obviously that is the that's the SNAP survey figures, as I understand it, as of the 13th of February. Can I, and I think it's linked to Member Olifir or one of the other colleagues asked a question. As we are, as of the 13th of February, okay, that was, so the SNAP survey appears to indicate, according to the revised answer, it was 1,045,000. Can I ask, on that date, how many learners in the Western Cape were still seeking places in our schools on that date? Because obviously there's a SNAP survey. These are the learners in our in our classrooms, right? But what was the number of learners still not placed by the 13th of February, according to the department's own records?
Chief, I might just comment on that. I'm going to ask Mr. Matsidiso has that in his head, because as you know, the numbers change every day, and he probably won't be able to give you the exact number. We can come back to you, though, because we have obviously kept track about how that ratio goes. And again, we must also just say that as of today, the numbers that I said this morning, even those numbers are not necessarily precise numbers anymore, because significant numbers of them are no longer in place. So there's always a bit of a lag time. Mr. Matsidiso, are you able to, do you have the 13th, more or less, how many were unplaced on that day? 13th of Feb.
The SNAP survey.
I think it's a difficult question to have at his fingertips. We'll get back with that number if it's okay. He may find it now, but it won't be.
Chair, could, maybe I missed when the HOD answered the question, but like, say today, or in the department, obviously we must be dealing with the figure of unplaced learners. So as of like now, if we had to ask how many learners do we still need to place in our schools, say today, what's the current rough number we still looking at?
I can tell you what.
Thank you. I'll show an estimate.
Yeah.
You okay?
I can tell you what was last week. Let me see if Mr. Matsidiso has an updated today. Mr. Matsidiso, do you have an update number?
In terms of the totals today, we are sitting at 1,332 not placed, of which we have to clean the system by Friday. With the total number that we have, we will have placed plus minus 500 learners, which means we'll be sitting at just under 800 unplaced learners.
Thank you.
And if I may augment, just in case the information is not fully complete and understood, we are also in the process of placing mobile classrooms, which are to be placed according to all promises that we received by the end of March, in which case these learners will all have been accommodated in those mobile classrooms. So that's the estimate indication. This is a hopeless case. They are intended to be placed if those numbers don't increase again.
Thank you. So let's just say this quo, I can say please. And then in terms of future.
Can I just also clarify that that number is not, I mean, that number is like a moving target. It doesn't mean that they've been out of school since the beginning of the year, because a number of them only arrived quite recently.
Thank you. Member Willie,
just a rider now. Given that this plus minus 800, and we're almost getting to the second quarter, obviously there's now what that needs to be done, a catch-up a program that needs to be in place, and whether that program is in place and to get those learners up to the level that other learners are.
Chief, I may thank you for that. The point is, none of these learners were learners that had registered on time last year. None of these learners. They are learners that have arrived subsequent to that. So it's difficult to hold us to account for those that we've been unable to plan for. Nonetheless, we, an education department, and so we have in place in every district catch-up opportunities, and if they are placed in a variety of schools where we know we're going to place them because of the mobile classrooms, some of those kids are already actually at school being taught by a teacher, but they're not yet placed in a classroom, and therefore the schools don't want to place them on their register until the classrooms have arrived, but they are receiving some tuition.
But for the rest of that, we in all the districts have got catch-up plans, etc. And some of them will be supported by teachers once they're in the school to catch up.
Thank you, H.O.D. That is right, member. 181.
Chair, 181. Just a paragraph there, Chair. I see the $4.6 million that goes to the after-school game changer. But, Chair, what I don't understand is just the sentence above that one, where we will be spending $17 million, you know, 2018-19, and it goes to 19 the next financially and so on. But that's for purposes of the MOT refurbishment and equipment and maintenance. Now, my understanding is why should this department be responsible for those things? Maybe the modeling, how does it work? Why should the refurbishment and equipment and maintenance of those be done by this department and not by cultural affairs and sport? I'm just thinking out, you know, a bit wild, because it's quite a substantial amount that just go to the MOT center. And secondly, Chair, I know when we are at cultural affairs and sport, there is a dedicated official responsible for this after school game changer there. But we've asked them to come and present to us at that committee what exactly is the curriculum or the rollout of this thing in terms of educational benefits, not the sport and cultural affairs. Because we want to see what are these learners doing after school, which relates directly to your curriculum and so on. But currently it's still something that we can't put the dots together. And the funding, for an example, then is there, but we don't see whether, I feel that maybe one needs to quantify the value for this money that we're spending in this small program, if it's still as it is currently. But I just want to understand why should we, as the department, then be responsible for refurbishment and maintenance of equipment.
Thank you, Member. Richard E.
Chair, it's a difficult thing when there are allocations to different departments within the same government, because the MOT centres are also schools. They are our property, that's our maintenance, they are our computer labs, for example, that is there, that's our halls that are being used and so forth. So the maintenance and the refurbishment, the equipment, for example, that gets used now extra by a variety of people, for example, does need maintenance. So the allocation for that, it's our equipment. The moment it's in there, it's our resources. If I can just say, DCAS can explain what they're doing in the after schools game changer, but we are working together in doing so. That it's not totally unlisted entities. We all know that well-functioning schools all have extensive after-schools programs. Now, part of that has got to do with physical development, with the team sport, and with cultural affairs, with debating, with choirs, etc. And the kids are kept off the school. And what we're doing through the after-schools game changer, and when I say we, in conjunction with education, but they are driving it, and I'll explain the reason why they're driving it. DCAS is driving it. Because school sport, the whole issue about sport had been residing with them. So because of that, the budget for it is there, and therefore it resides there. Now, the value of the interaction with us in that context is to expand that also, once again, in a redress context to learners that are not normally have been exposed to it. And ultimately, we would want after-schools program at all schools in the province. That's where the vision is. That's where we want it to go, to keep kids off the school, off the road, keep schools off the streets, not off the schools. And also there is some remedial work. There's extra maths lessons. There are e-learning digital resources that are scoped. And literacy programs in primary schools, etc. So it's an integrated and supportive program that certainly we believe also augments the whole education experience. And remember, education is not just about the academic. It's actually about educating the whole child.
Thank you, HOD. Okay, just one announcement from my side. Again, thanks for the questions. Thank you for the responses. I'm counting here. It's only a few pages. Seeing that we are in a school situation and education situation, from my side, it's break now. Eerste pauze. So are we, there's some refreshments outside. I ask you to go and help yourself.
Sop and brew.
Sop and brew. Nutrition scheme. It's our feeding scheme. Thank you. Listen, and perhaps, I hope so. I hope it's not the case. We must take cognizance of the fact, members, I'm talking to the members, that we still have our guests from Nyanga, Mr. Mbiko and his team, who must also make a submission or a representation. Yeah. Thank you so much. And they are, you came by taxi, eh? The taxi is also waiting. Okay.
Is it recorded?
Yeah.
Hey, brother.
Can you look at it?
Ja, ek het hom net gekontak. Dit is ekstra fokus op 40 gaat dit van
Well, it is fine, and let me also the container from that door. Okay. Yeah, okay, I'm fine. Hi, Breeda, how are you? Good, man. Listen, is it true that the CPT Bovel closed down? Is there a problem? Is it? But just when I see Marco, there's something not right. He's told me now, no, you can close down the campus. That's also. Okay. Listen, and then did you get that message that I sent you about whether we can have a meeting with you guys tomorrow at our offices? Normally suggesting that we actually meet at the caucus, you know, Whale Street. Are you guys able to come? I think it was suggested 12 o'clock. No, I think it would be nice if it could just be, you know, like some of your provincial leadership and then one or two key person from UWC. I think, you know, normally seems to be keen, as I've told you, for this meeting, because we focus on what we can do about those that are still excluded, you know. But then I think it's also a good opportunity to start, you know, starting to look at how else we can support you guys in terms of issues around the SOC elections and the post sort of no fee issue. I don't know. So even if it's just a few of you, then you, is it difficult tomorrow for you to open your
name? I think many items there will be. Now I started a discussion of interest. I don't think
that's okay. Okay.
I want to know how can you find
people. That's fine. Yeah, no, that's cool.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. I think it's more like a routine discussion. What can we do to help the group that you're already meeting about charges? We just want to try and resolve the issues of suspensions or charges so we can just stabilize the situation at the campus. We don't want some unexpected meeting. All right.
What can we do?
Okay. That's good. No, that'll be good, and then we can. Then you know, there's this notion of what should our attitude be towards PASMA and EFF students who are in a similar situation, because like Sinako is pushing that we must form this big alliance with you guys. I'm not saying we shouldn't. We should see as how we can assist in dealing with students who are excluded, but we need to understand what we should do. Okay, cool. Yeah, now we need to work out that issue of being consistent, and particularly if you're going to be helping people, then you need to have a commitment to a transformation, but not kind of anarchism. You really have to do the line on that.
Okay, well, thank you very much. At 12 o'clock tomorrow, Wales Street, eh? Okay, sure, of course. Thanks.
Can we have done by 5?
Right, it's time to restart. Thank you so much, all on board. I'm sorry to stop you so abruptly. Thank you, everybody. going to start now, and as I alluded to earlier on, that we're going through the book page by page and also allow sufficient time for our guests from Nyanga. They have to travel by taxi. We must think about their safety, the fact that they we can't let them leave late, and the weather, etc. And my eyesight was not good at night. I find it extremely difficult. Now it's effective, extremely difficult. And normally one line is 10. And I don't take anything stronger than Coke. But I see 10 lines. What's in the Coke now? Just Coke. Coke in Coke. 182. Page 182. 183. 184. 185, 186, 187, 188, 189, 190, 191, 190 is...
That's just linked to what Mr. Lewis added around the drought issue. Just to confirm, at the bottom of that page it indicates that... there are going to be water resource infrastructure projects amounting to 77 million. That's for this financial year. And if I'm correct, Mr. Lewis, when he was explaining to us, I think, is the figure now, did you mention an amount of 300 million in total? So is that over the MTEF, or is that now for 2018-2019? And I just wanted to get a sense of, is that just reflected in other parts of the budget? And whether this is kind of a moving target given where we are with the day zero projections or extending those dates now, do you still think we're going to, the 300 million that you refer to is kind of the figure that you're using, or might it change?
Chair, no, the 77.5 is what I said that Treasury has granted to education for drought. The 300, that is the amount that we will use in the new financial year for drought interventions. So those amounts, the other, we'll check that the most of the money for drought is under the upgrade and what's the supply upgrade and addition. It's in that line paragraph, but it's 300 million. The question whether if day zero is being pushed out, whether we should slow down on the drought interventions. Chair, our decision is not to slow down for various reasons. We see the drought interventions, how difficult it may be, also as a blessing in disguise to assist our schools. Because going into the future and not knowing what the weather and rainfall patterns will be, it is important that we make our schools drought resistant, you know, so that whenever there's no rain, there's no rain, that schools will be in a position to sustain themselves in terms of their water needs. But secondly, most of our schools use the norms and standards funding that's allocated to them to deal with municipal services and those type of accounts. So if we can get the school off the grid, municipal grid, at least we can save that norms and standards funding for other educational purposes and needs. So it's more than just dealing with the drought, but also to try and sustain and help our schools, especially in poorer communities, to stretch the norms and standards allocations that they get.
Mr. Lewis, are you following?
Chair, I think it's more just if we could request the department through Mr. Lewis and his colleagues to give us a sense as to how they plan to spend the 77 and the 300, like you mentioned, things like maybe you're going to buy water tanks or whatever the case may be. If we could just have a sense of how you plan to spend the money, I think that would be useful. And if you don't mind, Chair, Mr. Lewis just mentioned something about, you know, and I think it was linked to what Mr. Shreed and Mr. Eli were talking about in regard to, you know, the no-fee schools and generally the pressure, and Mr. Lewis has now referred to the norms and standards for municipal services. Now, we actually had an oversight visit as Public Works the other day, and just to commend, I think both departments, because we went to look at the school in Horsen. Everyone would remember the drama that we had there, and it was really good to see, that the problems have been corrected, and just the way that school has been designed and how it's operating. And one of the things which came up there was the whole idea of putting solar panels on the school, and possibly in that way, reducing the municipal services paid for electricity. Now, what we had a bit of a discussion with the officials from both departments there. What I just wanted to ask, just out of interest, I know it's coming in a bit in an unusual place, but it is around infrastructure, I suppose. I just want to ask, has the department received any proposals from the private sector? Because what sort of emerged in that discussion was whether, say, a private sector investor would, for instance, say, okay, we'll give us 100 schools, we'll put up solar panels, and we'll pay for the infrastructure, and then work out some kind of funding model. Have you received any such proposals, or is it simply something that people have really worked out and is not going to really amount to a sustainable revenue stream for the investor? Is this an issue for the department at the moment, and have you received such proposals?
Thank you, Member Dagmar.
Chair, I haven't seen formal proposals to the effect from any donor or outside service provider wanting to do it, but at some point ourselves and in the province, I think it's dealt with a subsection in the Department of the Premier, who's driving the electricity and so on, and that subsection was once approached by a service provider, I think it's from outside the country, to go into some kind of a venture around this, but then the school had to conclude agreements with the bank, you know, and it was, for us as education, it was too complicated, and we would never want to put our schools into something where in the end, if the agreement fails or whatever, then our schools are bound financially, which will eventually come back to the department. But we are aware of one school in Paarl, I think, it's an independent school that put up these solar panels, and I think the school, the information I got is that by the fifth year, it's only by the fifth year that you will break even, and then you start to gain something which you can put back into the grid. And I know the school was still in the process to get permission from the municipality to get in 5 years' time the excess electricity into the grid, and it was a challenge for them. So there are various challenges with the venture.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. MEC.
I just want to add, I mean, this morning at the school that I visited with Minister Grant, I mean, I did also raise the issue. They're doing very well on the water, but I did say we really need to look more at solar power, given our climate and so on. We certainly have enough sun. So I haven't had a chance to speak to Mr. Lewis yet, but I did have a brief chat to the public works officials, and I would like them to discuss the possibility of having a pilot to see how we can actually do it, and is it feasible. Not necessarily on that model, but I mean, we really need to become more energy efficient.
Thanks for that input.
Yeah. It's just this, the table on personnel numbers and costs. and I just wanted to ask, there are some, if you look at the salary levels and then they link to personal numbers, and I just wanted to compare 2014-2015, which is on the top left there, page 194, and then for the projections for 2018-2019, you will see that salary levels 1 to 6, in 2014-2015 it's indicated that there were just over 10,000 personnel in that salary band, and that it's dropped now in 2018-2019 to 9,801. And then you would see there that salary level 7 to 10, it was 28,000 then, and it's now almost up to 30,000. And then I see there's been a reduction of 11 to 12 from 1,300 to 1,298. And roughly senior management has stayed pretty much the same, 48, 47. Can I just ask, is there anything sort of happening there? Is just that like rank and not promotions, or what's really, is there any explanation for some of that movement in the salary levels and the number of personnel? And the concern for me is that if you look at personnel numbers in 2014-2015 and then compared to 2018-2019, it's from 39,592 to 41. You know, I think it's just the concern which the committee has raised already, is those numbers just keeping pace with growth in learner numbers. You know, it clearly seems, if you look at the percentage growth rate, you know, it's a very, very low growth rate, 0.2%, 0.3%, and obviously it seems, I would imagine, that the learner numbers are clearly growing faster than that. So I'm just really noting that concern and asking if there's any explanation for the movement of personnel in terms of salary bands.
Chairperson, thank you. Yeah, indeed it is a situation of people being promoted, your grade progressions that take place over years as people, you know, have completed their particular period at a level, then they've been promoted. Other people apply for promotion posts, and that's why they move up. In terms of the relationship with learner growth, it is indeed so that we're falling behind as public servants. But maybe on the other hand, it's that our public servants are mainly in head office and maybe not so close to the learners, you know, as staff at the district offices. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carolus. Satisfied, Member Dagmar, Member Willepier.
No, just on page 27 on the APP, also dealing with personnel and so, I'm just looking at the vacancy rate there. I know Member Dagmar spoke about the movement, but also the vacancy rate. And I just want to understand those percentages on page 27 of the APP. You've got a 13% in Program 1 vacancy rate and 23 in Program 6. And you've got 11, 17, and 26 vacancy rate. Is that a normal percentage? Or do I only see that you are not appointing? There's quite a lot of vacancies there. What does that say to me? Check what does the 26 in Program 6 there, and also if you go check, just explain those high vacancy rate percentages to me.
Mr. Carlos.
I can start off with Mr. Carolus. If you take a look, Program 1, for example, is administration, so it's not a high level. That includes the staff, head office, etc. If you take a look at the percentages, they are generally not bad. Program 7 is exams. Program 6 is infrastructure. And
in that infrastructure program section. So you will see where the pressure points are, where we're not filling because of trying to get the money more into the schools and to the teachers in the schools. It does, and it illustrates the point that we've said often, that the administration is also under burden and under pressure. But it's partly also a choice that we are slower in filling the posts that are not directly school related because of the challenges that we face there.
Thank you, Jody. Shedish White. 195. And now we have from page 119 up to page 239. What is it now? Page 219. 197. From page 197 up to page 219, the annexes. If members have any questions on the annexes, I'm going to lump it.
I'm not sure if on page 198 the issue of the percentage change from the revised estimate, I want you to draw your attention once again to the program one, training and development. Is this the same? I asked an earlier question because it was also like about a 200% increase. This one says 155% increase to 9.7. It's again training and development. Is that the same amount? And if Mr. Eli can help us, is that basically the same question I asked, and do you have an answer yet or not?
Yes, I do have a bit of an answer, and it is related to that. And Mr. Karolis has indicated to me that there are three areas of increase. Mr. Karolis, will you just mention that quickly, please, and then I'll augment?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, the department have decided on a leadership and management development strategy that we are going to implement for our public servants and office-based educators, and that is one of the reasons for the increase. The second one is that we have a compulsory induction program where we've had a backlog because DPSA have implemented it at a later stage or retrospectively, so we have to catch up on that. And the third one is also for bursaries. So those are the reasons. Thank you.
And the bursaries is not the major part of this, but we are behind significantly. We've neglected, if you like, the personnel training and part of the bursary, but particularly the training, development, induction, those areas we've in a sense neglected. And if we don't address that a little bit better, then it can also give us problems going forward.
Thanks for the honest answer, Judy. Any more questions on the annexure? Going, gone. Bert is by the van Paul. Thank you, members. I think at this stage, I just want to thank all the members for the questions. Thank you very much to the WCD, to MEC and HOD and the scheme for the answers, and also in the way that it has been conducted. The questions were distinct, the answers were, the responses were also straight from the cup, and I think we are satisfied. I'm going to give Mr. Mbiko, he's the captain of the team, I think, yes, okay, of the Nyanga Forum, his chance to table his questions or submission. You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But unfortunately today, I'm not going to give any answer. There's a gentleman, he was representing Ilingi School Governing Body. They are here, this is a part of an orientation, sort of induction. They've just been newly elected as a school governing body. Now they want to have a feeling, how do they sit in parliament? The question I was going to ask, otherwise I'm going to through you, Mr. Chair, I'm going to visit the MEC for education. It's about the training for the school governing bodies. There are two sort of trainings. You can look at the APP. Yeah, in page 36, there's a training for the school governing bodies. In page 74, you get the training for financial management. I don't know whether those two different trainings, or what is that, or is it the same training? Lastly, Mr. Chairman, I'm giving the Department of Education 6 months. I'll be meeting them in October. And I'm not going to come here again. I'm going to the national government. Because I've been frequenting this parliament for the last 4 years, starting from 2014 until now. This is my last appearance. Mostly you'll be seeing that old man. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mbiko. Thank you so much, and I give over to HOD to respond.
Chair, just in terms of the SGB training, Mr. Mbiko, I'm going to ask Mr. Tao Matsidiso to respond to the SGB training, just a little bit of information for you.
Thanks, Chairperson. In terms of our plan, we are going to train all the newly elected SGBs. We have already scheduled programs and training schedules for the new SGBs, and we'll be assisted by some of our stakeholders who are providing training. We train SGBs on financial management, on recruitment and selection, as well as some other issues related to governance of the school. So there is going to be training from April, once we have finalized the election of the new SGBs. Then we'll start with training. So there is a program for training.
Very much, Mr. Disho. Satisfied? We are eagerly awaiting the second submission.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, the committee, MEC for Education, members of the governing bodies. I must say that it's a great honor that I've been given an opportunity to come and make a very, very short input around the school that we serve as governing board members. And I must say that there are a number of challenges to our schools locally, particularly in the townships. Challenges such as, you know, the break-ins, criminal activities within the schools that affects mostly, you know, even learners themselves, where at times when you sit and try to interview the learner responsible for such, you know, unbehavioral activity, you will then find out that the type of behavior that the learner has does not only lie on him or her, but also it's what I may call a societal problem that emanates perhaps from, you know, his or her family member, because of the fact that some of, you know, these learners are coming from, you know, single parents and so on. But without, you know, dwelling much on that, I must say that also to us as governing body members, it's been a learning process of how then to respond to such challenges. As I've been serving as a governing body member for the past 5 years, we had developed, you know, in fact we had an idea that perhaps some of our schools locally did not have, you know, sufficient facilities, such as the, you know, outdoor sporting facilities, where you'll find that the ground is so vast, but it lacks, you know, it lacks, or even there's a complete absence of facelifting where it would encourage a learner to get involved in a sporting activity like upgrading the school itself to become or to establish a sporting facility like your football, your rugby, your tennis, etc. But having said that, we kept, going with the process to an extent that lately, around 2013, we've developed a plan where a multi-purpose hall would be required to the very same school, because we learned that out of giving a glimpse to the document known as a curriculum, that there is an element there that also encourages certain elements like the performing arts elements, where your ballet dance and so on, as well as the drama and so on. But in this very same particular school, we don't have a facility to accommodate such programs, which has led us to develop a layout plan where we envisage that perhaps a multi-purpose hall can be squeezed in so as to encourage, the kids, because the talent is out there. All that is required is to be encouraged, where you would, draw on board. For example, adjacent to the school facility, we do have what is called the Nyanga Arts Development Center, where we have recruited professional artists, which the Nyanga Arts Development Center have developed a program known as the Artist in Schools, where we have deployed, various professional artists to train or to run programs in these schools. So that's the challenge that faces us as a governing, as a school governing body, in Nyanga in particular. And I'm sure every one of you is aware of how notorious Nyanga is in terms of the crime. I believe one of your MEC, I don't know which department is he, Mr. Fritz, yes. He had to make a duck and dive when the criminals were. So that's the type of scenario that faces us in Nyanga, which requires us, not only us as governing bodies, but the entire community, to stand up and develop a system whereby we can be able to change the face of Nyanga. So, in my conclusion, we have this layout plan that I humbly think that you, through you, Madam Minister, you will be able to think positively about the availability of this multi-purpose hall at that school. I think I must just pause there. If perhaps there's any question, maybe, I don't know. But I also propose to leave this copy with you, Chairperson. Thank you very much indeed. Yeah.
Thank you so much for the presentation. I'm going to ask MEC to respond to your request.
Thank you. I didn't get your name from
My name is David Chambula, as in T-S-H-A-M-B-U-L-A.
Mr. Chambula, yes, I'm very familiar with Langa and Nyanga. My constituency is there. I'm often in the area, and I know what you're talking about. The provincial government also is committed to trying to improve the situation in Nyanga, and we are focusing on that as far as alcohol abuse is also concerned. I have asked Mr. Lewis if he can tell us whether your school is on the list for halls. We do have a program of rolling out halls at schools. But we obviously have to balance it with the money we have and having to build new schools and also trying to get, but he doesn't know offhand, but we will have a look at the list and see. And if there is any way we can speed up your school, I would happily motivate for that, especially given the fact that you are proactive and are wanting to do something for the community. So we will get back to you. If you can leave your details, maybe with the chairperson, if they could maybe give it on to us and also forward us the plan too, so we can have a look at it. And we will see what we can do. I'm not promising, but we will really try, because we share your concern for Nyanga, and we would love to see some more facilities for the young people.
Thank you very much.
Member Dagmar.
Chair, could I just propose that we visit the school so that we can see firsthand some of the things that the chairperson is explaining to us, and then also just to try and understand the partnership between the arts centre and the school. But I would propose that we do actually come and visit
excellent.
The school.
Thank you
very much.
We know that. Thank you, Mr. Shambula.
Thank you very
Mr.
much.
David Shambula.
Thank you very much, sir.
May I at this juncture just in good faith, both of you and Mr. Mbiko, I was so more impressed with your passion and your, and I must say this before I end this meeting or terminate this meeting, as really true South Africans, servants of the people. And I think what is evident is your Batu Pele principles that you adhere to, and also the creation of Ubuntu in your area. And I think this is what we need, to come here solution driven. I'm tempted to say I think Cyril Ramaphosa has a competition. He better watch competition for his presidency. The two of you must fight it out who wants to become president. But thank you, Mr. Mbiko, thank you, Mr. Jambula, for showing the other side of the coin of Nyanga. We are well aware of the fact, and I think ad nauseum, we hear that Nyanga is a murder capital of the Western Cape and of South Africa. Now, there are two sides to a story, and now you came around and you put the other side to us. Wishing the newly elected members of the governing body everything of the best, Godspeed. Keep the faith, it's hard work, but it is worth every stretch of the muscle. Thanks for your commitment, your dedication, diligence, and also the fact that you are sacrificing your time, your space and place, your families, to render a massive, a major, core critical service to the people in Nyanga. We can only wish you well. We can only pray for you that God will guide you, that we will show you the light, and also keep you on track. And I'm sure, and I would just want to give you this hope today, that you will open that door that nobody can close or shut. Thank you very much for your contribution. Thank you so much. Godspeed, and a safe journey, bring you traveling mercies. All the best. Right. Thank you, Mr. Jambula, once again, and travel safely. Thank you. I just want to take the opportunity to, we came, all good things come to an end. It's a pity I felt like sitting here the whole day. You know, 9 o'clock is 9 o'clock. Ek ek het gemik vir aandete. Nou I set my sights on dinner, 6 o'clock. But I can carry on till 9 o'clock, that's when I have my Horlicks to go to bed or Milo. But seeing that we are falling short of 9 o'clock, it's not even 5 o'clock. I thank the community of Nyanga Forum in their absence for coming to present, and what an inspirational experience. Honestly, it's heart-rending. I feel it also a different type of person. To me, it was sheer inspiration and motivation to carry on with my work that I am doing as well. And really, I can keep on. But in any case, thank you, MEC, Minister Debbie Schaefer, thank you very much. And HOD, Brian Schreder and his team, the whole team, for what you are doing in terms of creating opportunities and space and place for our young kids, our learners, our children, your children, the Western Cape's children, South Africa's children, to create opportunities for them. And for the world of work, to get involved, engaged in the economy, to contribute to the building of this beautiful country of ours. Honestly. And you are, just carry on with the work that you are doing. You're doing great work. We appreciate it very much. To our members of the public, and also the officials that attended here, other officials, thank you very much, also in the absence. The media, Malherbe, thanks very much. You're always around. Our interpreters, language practitioners at the back. And then my coordinator was Imam Hassan Musa, who really, it will only take 20 seconds. I never slept last night. No, but because of my wife. My wife has a lower back pain. But I just hope she doesn't hear me complaining about her now. She hides it. But in any case, when she stays awake, I have to be awake too. So I went to bed at 1:20 this morning, and I left home at 4:30. I have to, from Coles River to here, it's always congestion on the roads. So, but I feel like a person who had 8 hours sleep. You know, a person of my age must have 8 hours sleep. You look a little bit old. You're still young. Jy het meer grys hare, sê maar, jy's jonger man. But in any case, so after this session, and I think also in terms of the spirit and energy that has been generated here, I feel I can do the Comrades Marathon twice. Thank you very much to the officials also then, and members, my colleagues. Thank you very much for your input and for carrying it through and making it things work. And also for the probing questions, and we just carry on with our mandate and we carry it forward. Thank you so much, and Godspeed, and all the best. Thank you very much.